Welcome to the Digital Accessibility Experts podcast from Hassle Inclusion. Well, hi, welcome to podcast number 4. So with me in the room today, I've got Graham Armfield, Jacob Uzier, and John Gooday, and myself, Jonathan Hassle. And New Year is that time where you do all those kind of New Year's resolutions, and people kind of try and do things differently to the way they've done in the past, whether it's dieting or whatever. So we believe that accessibility is something that is done by teams. It's done by all of the different job roles in the team, that everybody has a role to play. We always want organizations to try and improve their accessibility. But this was actually, and Yak, I'm kind of looking at you at this point. I was inspired by you. You were kind of saying, you know, let's just make it really, really simple. So the inspiration was the one thing that that developers, that designers, different people in the team could do this year to make accessibility more a feature of the products that that they're creating. So we're going to start with developers. So what do we think the one thing that we would really want developers to do in 2019 to make their code more accessible? Graham, I guess I'm looking at you.
For me, I think it's impossible to overstate the importance of semantic HTML. When you're thinking about websites that are being delivered into someone's browser that will be interpreted in different ways with potentially assistive technologies, it's all about the quality of the HTML that gets put into the person's browser. And a lot of project teams are using various frameworks now, like React, Angular, stuff like that. There is a tendency when you've got pre-built components to just pick them up and run with them. But it's really important that we actually don't lose sight of all the semantic HTML elements that there are. Things like list items, links, buttons, and what have you, and headings especially. Because it is possible to do to build a fully accessible website using React. But I've seen examples where React components just put out a pile of divs, which are semantically neutral, and so there's no meaning conveyed there at all. I mean, yeah, the text might be there, but in like assistive technology doesn't know whether this is a heading or a link or a button or whatever.
So it's not ARIA then? Developers should be doing in 2019 is actually, for want of a better word, going back to the basics.
I think
and
so.
Actually
I
mean, just I think, not throwing ARIA at everything.
Yeah, definitely. Because I've seen a lot of examples in websites where someone wants to put a button on a page. So instead of using the button element, they'll put a div on it and they'll give it some button styling. And they'll also use all the ARIA attributes necessary to actually to make it seem like a button. And then not forgetting, of course, that you need to make it keyboard focusable as well. And you see, you get all this over-engineering of products, of an element there, when a button would just do. And you can completely style a button how you want to do it, but the browser gives you all the functionality and what have you for free.
So it may not be sexy, and it may not be something that was created yesterday as a buzzword thing in terms of a library or a React or whatever, actually just saying, you remember HTML?
Yes.
Just use it like the way it was supposed to be used.
Because most of HTML stuff, the sort of like the thing, the way how the browsers interpret older HTML, even HTML4 and before, there's obviously a lot of thought went into it in the early days, making things obvious that you can click on them and the browser functionality, and it's standard across the piece. And so why not pick up on that? And I think that's really important.
Anyone else? Anything that's more important than that for developers in 2019? Or are we all together on that one? Yeah, that's all together on that one.
Yeah,
okay, that's good.
I can't disagree with that one.
Yeah, there you go. That's good. Okay, so designers. So the one thing that designers we really would just kind of like want them to do in 2019 Who wants to go on this one?
I think one of the key things for me, well, there's two things. Can I do things?
You can do two things and then we'll vote.
I think is designers need to get into the kind of the persona area of understanding the variety and complexity and the kind of slightly more, not extreme, I would say, kind of slightly more outside of a typical kind of like scenario. So they're thinking about a little bit more about things like keyboard interactions, people using different font color, you know, different colors, different font sizes, because at the moment then that's not really integrated. One of the things about personas is they're a great tool, but they don't currently really systematically integrate some of the little things that will make a lot of difference to help kind of like teams build accessible kind of products, because it tends to be an afterthought. So you might have one person might know about this kind of stuff, but if you integrate it into personas as part of the process of building, it makes it a lot more understandable, and people can see why this stuff needs to be done rather than technically why it needs to be done. They get the human side, they get the human knowledge of why somebody will benefit from this, and it kind of feeds through the process. Mm-hmm. The other challenge with that is how do you communicate it through the process? Mm-hmm. So from experience, I've worked with quite a few teams, and whereas you might have one or two people that kind of understand, it will break at some point through the process because it's not communicated as part of the specification. So you might have an interaction designer, the UX person that's building the flow, will know this stuff, but it will break because the designer doesn't know, the visual designer doesn't know, and the dev doesn't know. Mm-hmm. So the other thing is about how do you communicate effectively kind of key points about what needs to be integrated through the process.
So you're trying to sneak a second one in there. So it's kind of like get, if you like, the needs of people with disabilities into your personas and then make sure you communicate them well.
Yes.
So is that okay? I mean, is that like one thing or is that two things? I don't know. Are we allowing John that?
Yeah, I think so. I think if you're looking at New Year's resolutions, so for me, obviously, EU directive has come out. There's the new WCAG standard 2.1. And, you know, standards are going great. People are aware of them. There's a lot of publicity around them, especially with legal cases going on in America, especially. But I think for me, 2019 needs to be more the year of people. You need to put more of a personal slant on it. So going back to these legal cases, no one has said, I'm suing you because it's not WCAG compliant or you've not made it in an accessible way. It's all about whether people can use the actual product, whether people who use assistive technology like screen readers, voice recognition systems, magnification systems can actually use it. So with all of these job roles, yes, look at the standards, but pay more attention to actual end users and get more end users in for testing. Because otherwise standards become a tick box exercise where you think you're doing the right thing, but for someone who is actually visually impaired or motor impaired, they might use it in a completely different way than your persona has attributed it.
I think the one thing that I'd really want to point out is design is quite an amorphous label. You've got to look at the whole UX process. It goes from first concepts through the kind of whole, you know, people tend to kind of clump them together.
Yeah.
And the reality is each role within that has some specific stuff they need to be aware of.
Yes.
And you're right, yeah. The point is, you know, fundamentally user testing is fantastic, but we need to start somewhere. We need to get that kind of knowledge up front. Because the thing is, if the website is so bad, user testing is going to be no help at all. So there needs to be, the site needs to be in good enough state to actually benefit from that. Yeah. So it's a kind of process.
I'm gonna allow that as kind of like a general point there about a sort of like get the users involved, because actually if you get the users involved, then every single person in the team ideally is behind the screen looking at it going, oh, that's my bit that made that happen, or that's my work that just made that person have an awful experience. So, okay, we'll allow user testing, user research is actually something for everybody. What about business analysts then? You know, what do we want business analysts to do in 2019 for accessibility that maybe they're not doing at the moment? I do a lot of this. Shall I take this one?
Go ahead.
The big thing, I mean, and it's there in our training all of the time, you know, it's not what people expect. Business analysts expect that when they get trained in accessibility, you know, you just give them loads of WCAG, you just give them loads of technical stuff. But actually, our training is all about what is different about your product. What is different about the thing that you are actually trying to create? You know, WCAG is a great set of standards, and there's obviously loads of requirements in there. So a business analyst is going to get loads of requirements out of it. But it could be that your product's got nothing to do with WCAG. You know, it could be that actually your product is, you know, something for an Apple Watch, or you know, or it's kind of like a native mobile app where the set of standards that you actually want to be applying, you know, comes from Apple or sort of, you know, Google, the people behind Android, all the rest of it. So for me, I'm always kind of trying to get BAs to start thinking a little bit beyond those standards. Look, the standards are great, but do they work for the thing that I'm creating?
Yes, yeah. So just on that, I totally agree. So I've done a lot of business analysis work. And for me, I think 2019, for accessibility purposes, people need to think wider than just the thing they're looking at and look at complete journeys. So it's very easy for a business analyst to say, let's look at WCAG, let's make sure this web page is accessible, but you need to factor that into the service you're providing. So if you are, for example, a bank and someone's opening an account, if they need to come to your bank, how are you recording that they've got an accessibility need? How are you making sure that you've got a hearing loop in place or a quiet environment if that person has that need? How are you making sure that when you send them stuff out in the post, it's in the format they want? So by all means, look at WCAG, look at things you need as a business analyst for one component, but try and stretch that further across the entire journey. Because what WCAG doesn't do well is say, this is only one set of standards for a component, but it's not going to make your end-to-end service accessible just by doing the WCAG bit. Mm-hmm. People can't get into your bank if you've got no ramp. And if you're sending them stuff in the post, it's not in the Braille format, for example, that they want, they can't access it either.
It's actually about thinking beyond the product as well as thinking about what's unique about the product. Do you think we kind of get that in as kind of like, that's kind of like two things?
but I'm stretching your...
I almost think that that's better than my one.
Business analysts are the people who create the stories that get dropped into your, you know, your project software, whether it's Jira or something else. The problem has always been is like, how much do you actually put in a story that says that's like defining how a new piece of functionality for an app or a website is going to work? Do you literally put everything in there, or do you hope that the developers understand that, or where do you draw the line?
Fundamental problem is like how much knowledge is required at each stage,
and
that's the kind of education piece as well.
Yeah.
There's obviously a link between, so the BAs kind of like create that stuff and then they hand it over to a project manager, and the project manager then needs to try and work out how to kind of deliver all of this stuff. So I mean, what do we think, what do we want those project managers to do in 2019 for accessibility that they maybe haven't been?
I think that they need to give accessibility a sort of kind of a more of an equal footing with other requirements. You know, let's face it, no, very, very few project teams have like people who are sitting about doing not much, right? Mm-hmm. They're always under a lot of pressure because obviously IT projects are expensive. And so the people who, the product managers and the businesses themselves, there's always pressure, like we need this functionality, we need this, this product to, if it's a replacement for an existing product, it's got to, it's got to, as quickly as possible, reach feature parity with the previous product, right? But if we're also building a new one that's going to be accessible too, then project managers need to allow the time for the accessibility to seep into it as well, rather than just focusing blindly on this feature compatibility.
I think that's a really, really good point. We've talked about it before, that as a project manager, you need to be factoring accessibility in at the very earliest of stages, mm-hmm. because you've talked about feature parity.
Yeah,
people will go, right, this, let's say, account system has to do all the old account system did.
Yeah.
And then what they'll often do is look at accessibility right at the end. They'll do the kind of old-fashioned, let's do an audit, and then let's try and fix things.
Yeah,
and often it's too late.
Yeah.
So your New Year's resolution as a project manager is do accessibility as early as possible, even in discovery. Even if you get an accessibility body in a room and go, I'm thinking of doing A or I'm thinking of doing B, which is going to be the most accessible route. Mm. And then we can sit there screaming, going, don't do A, for God's sake, don't do A. Yeah. They'll do A anyway, and then we'll have to fix it, but never mind. But if they do it early enough, hopefully we can get to a point where it's more accessible and inclusive.
So test managers are in there as well. Mm-hmm. So, you know.
Well, the point is every role within the team needs to be engaged with it.
Yeah, absolutely. But I mean, from that testing perspective, I mean, you know, what do we want them to do? So if I'm the sort of the test strategy manager on, you know, on a product, you know, what do you want me to do to, you know, to deliver accessibility?
You need to know how to do the testing, basically. Either you need to know, as a test manager, you need to know how to do the accessibility testing, or you need to find someone who does, because without that, you're never going, you know, you're never going to spot the issues that could be sort of being baked into the website or the app.
I mean, that's cool. So yeah, it would be good that I kind of know about that. But I mean, say for example, I don't test things. I just manage the testing.
Okay.
So I'm setting in place the strategy for
you.
You know, when should I be doing accessibility testing? What sort of accessibility testing should I do? I mean, you know, Yak, you've been banging the drum for user testing. You know, is that it? So is 2019 the year that we just throw out audits and just do user testing?
It's got to be at the requirement stage, really, isn't it? Because if you've got a requirement that defines how things are going to work, then your test manager needs to be thinking about, okay, so how do I test this requirement? Yeah. And how do I test this requirement is delivered in an accessible way? Because accessibility is often your hidden or your invisible requirement here. Accessibility is a requirement that runs through it like words through a piece of rock.
Well, let me turn on his head. What is the ideal purpose of an audit? What is it, should it be there for?
For me, it's a rubber stamp. For me, it's a vote of confidence at the end.
It's a health check.
It's a health check.
Process,
it's not supposed to be something that creates a document which is 100 pages long. It's supposed to be something that makes you smile. To say, you got it right because your test strategy said, let's get our QA testers to test the things that they could test all the way through. Let's not wait until the end. Mm-hmm. Let's get some automation software into there to automate anything that we can reliably do. Let's do some user testing so we know that not only is the audit saying it's fine, but that's the expert saying it's fine. Does a user say it's fine?
No.
You know, actually putting accessibility as a fundamental part of the test strategy alongside performance and all the rest of the stuff, because it's as important as the rest of it.
Following on from that, this sounds weird coming from me, but I would like to kind of do away with the final audit. So if you can get accessibility done really early, let's say you've coded up one page, you can get someone to test that with users, if possible, against WCAG using assistive technology. And by testing that one page and showing people the mistakes they're making, hopefully when they do the next page, they're not doing the same thing. Mm-hmm. So the learning process as well as an iterative testing process. So they then make page two, they learn from page one, it's better, you do a bit more testing, you go, well, you've added another component, do this more accessibly, so when you do page three. So ideally, by the time they get to page 10, 20, whatever it is, they've learned from all the little drip feed approaches you've had. So you do 15 minutes, half an hour, which means then the 2 week long audit you would do at the end, which finds 150 issues, which are all high, not that I speak from experience, you don't have to do that. Hopefully people have learned. But
I think, unfortunately, human beings are in the process. And there will be mistakes. There will be different people doing stuff. So there's still to be something. But yeah, I think what we're really trying to say here is that audit should not be that kind of that thing, that kind of monolith at the end. It should be a lighter touch. It should be a kind of tick to say, yep, done a good job.
Yeah,
it's so actually like if we're testing all the way through, then by the end of it, it's not so important because actually that's not going to find loads of stuff because it's not the first time you've done it.
An analogy I've used a couple of times with people is if you go and see your doctor for a health check, they'll do your blood pressure, all that type of thing. They'll tell you to have a nice diet, to do certain things, exercise, you know, meditation, be aware of yourself, your surroundings. If you eat bad, you don't exercise and you smoke however many a day and you go to your doctor right at the end, there's not a hope in hell they're going to get you fit and well. But if you've gone to see them on a regular basis, periodically, and done the little things they've asked, there might still be things going wrong, but it's not going to be this massive shell shock at the end because you've done things early and you've done them in little tiny
So components. Back to the New Year's resolution thing, it's about a healthy lifestyle. It's not about a diet.
I'm trying to be too clever.
Yeah, you're a genius,
So, okay, so...
And can I just say the other benefit of that is it's more like to make sure a project is pretty much on time in comparison to...
Yeah.
I think that's for a lot of projects, that's a real...
Which presumably that's what the product manager, you know, really kind of needs. Product managers don't really get spoken about very much in terms of kind of accessibility circles. Do we think... I'll just throw this out there. Do we think that... a product manager is obsessed with roadmap. They're obsessed with what do I do? What do I add to my product? What do I change in my product to get more people using it? You know, to be better than my competition. Do we think that actually making it accessible, if it isn't yet, would actually bring more customers to using that product than maybe adding a couple of more features? Is it possible that actually that might be a better thing to do, to actually say, I'm going to hold that feature back and I'm going to do this accessibility? Yeah?
So I would say definitely, because as well as looking at accessibility, I look at assisted digital, which is more about the kind of attitude, the ability and the resource for someone to actually undertake a digital journey or interact with a digital site. So by adding more and more and more to a site or a service, it actually puts off people who are less IT literate. If you can pair it back and it's more intuitive and easier to use, more people will come to that site. There's lots of studies being done on sites for older people where they reduce the amount of links, they have more accordions, it's a more streamlined site, and it's preferred against something where there's just an abundance of links all over the place, because people become overwhelmed with that. And that factors into accessibility as well. It's not, you know, black and white, there's variations of that. By having something, you need to understand what the core feature of your site is and what people want to do. For example, book a train, open a bank account. Get that to work well, then do your user research and say, is there anything else you want from that? If you're getting people to go off on tangents and they're not actually able to complete that journey, it's going to put people off, and that's accessibility and assisted digital as well.
John?
A couple of things there. I'd say that makes perfect sense, and that's the key point of usability as well.
Mm-hmm.
The challenge you have is the mindset within a business typically is they want to put as many features in as possible.
As
quickly as possible, which means they kind of can be half-baked, they can't be working functionality well. So you have a real challenge of some people want to put everything in they can as quickly as possible, whereas on the one side, people want to say, what do we want our customers to actually use and do?
Yeah.
And there's always going to be a tension in a lot of organizations between those two. So there's a real challenge there of how you balance that out.
But I guess what we're saying is, if your roadmap says more and more and more and more features, maybe you might want to think, actually, let's improve the usability and accessibility of the ones that we have. Maybe that's a better thing to do.
Product managers also have to be aware of slippage. If there's I use a banking app, and it's generally pretty good from an accessibility perspective, but it changes quite regularly because presumably there's an active project team working on stuff. And so sometimes when I test it, it's actually very good. But 3 months later, I might find that there are buttons which don't work well in screen readers at all, and they're just not labeled properly, and there's features that just where accessibility is pretty poor, and then it will get fixed again 3 months later. You know, the product managers need to ensure there's consistency here. Getting new features in is obviously desirable, and it helps people with their lifestyle, since we're all being pushed towards like banking apps now and everything like that. But it needs to be consistent, because you will lose people. You will draw people in if it's more accessible, but then if it suddenly ceases to be as accessible again, then people will be shaken off. You know, and,
We've got a few more people to try and get in if we can. So briefly on these ones, please. Content authors. What do we want content authors to do? Yak, you got a view on this?
Yeah, content authors. It's really tricky because you're looking at things like reading level, maybe people with dyslexia, understanding, people who may not have English as a first language. So I'm going to refer you to my previous statement about user research again. Oh. And as a content author, you have to absolutely do user research to understand who your target audience is, to know who you're developing that content for. So what I try and do is when I've written something, give it to someone who knows nothing about my job, who will then go, what does that mean? I don't understand that. That abbreviation makes no sense. And then I rewrite that, hopefully, in plain English so that person can understand what the hell I'm going on about. Too many websites where, yes, if you go to a banking website, it's referring to banking, but I don't know what APR means. I don't know what compound interest means. I don't understand what PPI is. Try and explain that in a way that makes more sense and go find some users, do a bit of research, and then hopefully develop your content based on that.
Make things simpler, plain language. What about governance managers? So if you are trying to handle this for your whole organization, is there one thing that we would want people who are kind of setting the strategy for an organization around accessibility, what do we want them to do?
Carry a big stick. No, it's very tricky because depending on what level you're at in the organization, you've got to get buy-in from really senior people. You've got to have the kind of from the bottom up all the support. You've got to have people trained up. It's trying to raise awareness in your organization as much as possible of why we're doing this, why accessibility is important, and not that it's a blocker, but it benefits so many people. You can talk about the purple pound, the 249 billion. You can talk about things being easier to use, easier to maintain. It's trying to sell the benefits of accessibility, I think, for governance people to say, this is why we should be doing this.
Yeah. Not just, that's not going live because it's not accessible.
Yes, exactly.
You didn't break, you broke the rules. I'm sorry, that's it. You've had it. Telling why. So how about social media managers then? So Twitter, Facebook, it's not just websites, is it? Companies use all sorts of different social media channels to get their message out there. And they probably aren't even thinking about accessibility. Is there anything that we would want social media managers to start doing in 2019, do you think?
Use alternate text on images in Twitter.
That would be one thing. Thank you, Graham. Yak, you were about to say something as well.
Yeah, so when you say they're not thinking about accessibility, they're not thinking about it in the same way as other people. So they're not thinking about standards, but they're thinking, can people post to Facebook, to Twitter using Alexa or using Google Home or any other voice-activated device you could think of? But that is accessible in itself. If you can use Alexa to post an update to Twitter, you are being accessible. But you're not, as a social media manager, necessarily thinking, I'm doing accessibility. So it's kind of doing it without knowing you're doing it, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, that's cool. So by extension, what do we want accessibility people to do in 2019 that they possibly didn't it sort of before? Actually, the point that you were making there, which was to actually understand that some people are doing accessibility, they're just not calling it accessibility.
Exactly. You need to kind of think outside the box and be more innovative and look at the new upcoming devices. So we've got smartphones, we know, we've got voice-activated devices, we've got GPS, we've got wayfaring, all this sort of thing. And a lot of people are already using that to make things more accessible, but not calling it accessibility. It's just something that works for everyone. And if you're thinking about return on investment,
raise the whole question, is accessibility the right phrase to be using it? What is it? Could we use differently? Inclusive design, but then is it too geek? Is it too niche? So, what is accessibility to people? Different people interpret it different ways.
So, 2019, according to the CEO of Microsoft, no less, is the year of the inclusive design goes mainstream. Is that us? Are we going mainstream in 2019, or is inclusive design and accessibility different?
It's a really difficult one. It depends on who you ask and their interpretation of each of those things. Mm-hmm. I think 2019, there's going to be a massive explosion of new technology. And like I said before, people are going to make things accessible without actually realizing they're doing it. And maybe it's our job to realize that's happening, to kind of document it in some ways, and then make people who aren't doing that aware of it. Mm-hmm. So if there is a social media platform that doesn't allow an Alexa skill or doesn't allow you to use voice activation, say, look, this platform is doing it. Why aren't you doing it? Because you're then not being as accessible. You haven't got as many customers, so you're not feeling the benefit from accessibility. Maybe you're losing business. You're not getting the return on investment you should be. So maybe in some ways it's not just us putting things right, it's just raising awareness and talking to people and saying, look what they're doing. You know, if you think of the Microsofts to Google, they've got Google Glass, obviously they've got Microsoft Translate, these big apps that were designed to maybe translate languages but work really well for other users. So if you translate something into English, you've got automatic subtitling for people in a meeting who may be hearing impaired or cognitively impaired. Maybe Microsoft didn't think definitely this is accessibility, but it is. And we need to make people aware of things like that.
So we need some more positive stories as well, because accessibility can often be associated with that's wrong. We need to be encouraging the more, you say, the more kind of like positive kind of stuff that comes up.
And I mean, the strategic person who's kind of like trying to kind of push accessibility in an organization, I mean, I think one of the things that I want to see them doing in 2019 is, so the business case behind accessibility is I think, pretty well established now. I kind of almost want to see people going to the return on investment side of things, you know, to be talking less about the potential number of people who you could be, attracting to your product. And actually really taking seriously that it would be so much better to talk about the amount of people that we did. So it's almost like the case studies for when you did this, we were tracking the number of people, and actually the result is amazing. Rather than just please do this because it could be good, actually saying we did this and it was good. Is that making sense?
It does make sense. I think you need some hard numbers to actually highlight the benefits of why companies should, or organizations should do this.
Yeah, I mean, I think we need to get case studies. You know, we need to get more stuff out there.
There is a challenge, I think, is often usability and accessibility get intertwined. And they do metrics for usability. So the challenge will be, how can you distinctly separate out the benefits of usability and accessibility. Mm-hmm. So there's some challenges there. I'm not saying it's not possible, but we do need to, that's maybe
something for us to be thinking about 2019. Let's take that challenge and let's see if by the end of the year, we do something good in that area. Thanks guys, that was really good. Hopefully that's given a lot of people out there some pointers for what they can do in their job to make 2019 a year when the results of their hard work actually help so many more people, because everybody can use their products, not just some people. Next month on the Digital Accessibility Experts podcast, we've got something a little different for you. Most websites these days are created via some form of content management system. There are lots out there. So how do you choose the right one for you? One thing you can think about is how well the CMS allows you to create websites that are accessible. Graham and our team has been working to make WordPress accessible for years, and Mike Gifford, who's been doing the same for Drupal, is another good friend of ours. So next month, we're putting them together to discuss their work in a face-off between WordPress and Drupal, which is most accessible. Join us next month to find out.